This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After the tech stock bubble burst, a lot of Americans scrambled to find safer investments. For many, the answer was easy. There's no place like home. Over the past 5 years, we've been jumping headfirst into the real estate market, snatching up investment opportunities, buying houses without a down payment, and extending family finances to get in on the boom. For many parts of the country, it's been a wild and highly profitable ride, with national home prices rising 50% over the past 5 years. But what happens if you're the last one in before the housing market crashes? Bubble, bubble. For some time now, dire predictions for future home sales have found their way into almost every newspaper, magazine, and radio show. One of these years, those Cassandras may be right. So is it too late to buy your own home? Is it better to rent now and hope home prices come tumbling back to earth? And if you're currently in the real estate game, is this the right time to cash in your chips? Later in the program, we'll hear what happened in court at the sentencing of former WorldCom CEO Bernie Ebbers, and we'll talk about the man at the center of the investigation of White House leaks. But first, buy, rent, or sell. Is it time to get in or get out of the real estate market? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. A couple of weeks ago, the cover of The Economist magazine showed a plunging brick labeled house prices. We're joined now by Pam Woodall, economics editor of The Economist. She's with us from the studios of the magazine in London. Good of you to join us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Your recent report looked at America's housing market in global terms. What's been the trajectory of worldwide real estate prices, and why does that matter to us?
Well, we've never seen anything like this. Basically, at the moment, there's an unprecedented housing bubble, and I'll call it a bubble, worldwide. It's unprecedented in terms of the number of countries involved and the size of house price gains. Britain, Australia, Spain, France, Italy, China are all seeing huge increases in house prices. So basically what we have here is a global housing bubble. And I think in terms of what America can learn from the rest of the world, America's behind, say, Britain and Australia in terms of its house price boom. And so I think America needs to watch what happens in these countries where prices are already flattening off and learn lessons as to what might happen in America if and when prices flatten off or even fall there.
Well, one thing that you constantly hear about prices in America is that, going back a very long time, they've never fallen.
That is indeed true. The United States is actually quite unusual here. In most other countries in the world, especially Britain, we have at some stage seeing falling house prices. But even in America, you have seen quite big falls in some parts of the country in nominal terms. And even nationwide, you've seen sizable falls if you adjust for inflation in real terms. I think the difference this time is, and why I expect to see house prices falling in America in the next few years. One big difference this time is that house prices have never been so overvalued as they are at the moment. House prices are more overvalued in relation to rents and incomes than ever before. That makes it more likely house prices will fall. Secondly, in the past, it was inflation that helped to bring house prices back to some sort of equilibrium level. This time, inflation's low, and so either house prices have to stay flat for at least a decade or they fall. And then the third reason is this time we've seen investors play a much bigger role in the housing boom than in the past. And whereas if you're an owner-occupier and your house price flattens off or falls, you stay put as long as you can afford your mortgage. If you're an investor and you see house prices going into reverse, you're much more likely to sell, which then exacerbates any drop in prices.
Well, if there are lessons to be learned from Australia, the Netherlands, and from Britain, what are those lessons? What happens when the bubble deflates, if not absolutely bursts?
Well, I think the first important lesson is that contrary to conventional wisdom, you don't actually need a big rise in interest rates for home prices to falter. In all those three countries, Britain, Australia, and the Netherlands, house prices have flattened off, and indeed in Britain, by some measures, they're actually falling. They've but they flattened off without a big rise in interest rates. So, you know, that's the first thing. You know, you don't need this sort of trigger for housing bubbles to burst. The most important lesson, perhaps, is even if house prices just flatten off rather than fall, you can still see a very sharp slowdown in consumer spending. Take Britain. House price measures show that prices are roughly flat over the past year. And yet, a year ago, retail sales in the UK were growing at an annual rate of 8%. At the moment, they're growing at an annual rate of only 1%. That's a huge slowdown in consumer spending. And that's happened without any real drop in prices. I mean, what might happen to consumer spending if house prices actually fall?
Let's get listeners in on the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. Let's talk with Chris. Chris calling from Washington, D.C.
Hello, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Great. I had a question in reference to this pending bubble that everybody hears about or reads about nowadays. That's in specific, is it sort of a, as far as the U.S. is concerned, is it more of a nationwide issue or a regional issue? Because me specifically in Washington, D.C., I'm investing in a property in a very hot area, specifically Arlington, Virginia, and where the housing prices have doubled in the past 5 years. And I was just wondering, is there some, areas like Washington, D.C. where it just seems like there is no bubble in sight due to increasing demand and limited supply of good single-family housing.
Pam Woodall, is it a national thing or is it region by region, market by market?
Obviously, when you have house price booms, they vary by region. But this is a very popular argument for why it's not a house price bubble. This notion that there's a limited supply of land and a growing number of households wanting homes. We heard this argument in London as recently as a year ago. Now, in London, house prices are now falling. There is no doubt about that. Basically, even if you have this notion of demand exceeding supply pushing up house prices, if house prices become overvalued in relation to fundamentals such as rents and incomes, then at some stage the market has to correct and prices will fall.
Chris, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And Pam Woodall, we thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Pam
Goodbye.
Woodall, Pam Woodall, economic editor of The Economist magazine. She joins us from the studios of The Economist in London. Well, joining us here in Studio 3A in overvalued Washington, D.C. is Elizabeth Razzi, a real estate journalist and author of The Fearless Homebuyer, Razzi's Rules for Staying in Control of the Deal. And nice of you to be with us today.
Glad to be here.
Do you agree with the gloomy predictions that things are way out of whack?
Well, I really wouldn't want to advise people to get out of the house, bail out, and go live in a tent in the woods for fear that the house prices are going to peak right now. I think, for one thing, the United States market is such a huge market, and it's full of many, many, many little markets that there definitely is speculation and overpricing in some of these markets. But it is so specific. And most people, really, homeowners, don't need to go and worry about the value of their biggest investment plunging. I do think we can expect home prices to level out a bit, possibly decline, but we'll see this happen in parts of markets, likely. You'll see in some communities, for example, the very most expensive big houses might sit on the market longer, might diminish in price a little bit, but the more affordable homes and condominiums might keep raging. And so there are markets within markets, even in the Washington, D.C. area where we sit. There's a completely different market for condominiums versus the market for expensive houses.
Mm-hmm. Yet that aspect of speculation that Pam Woodall was talking about, that's become a significant percentage of sales. We all remember when day traders were all the rage, and what happened to stocks after
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a world of difference between the person who's looking for a home to live in for 3, 5, 10 years, raise their family. You know, that's a good foundation. You can still go ahead and buy a home like that without a lot of worry. The speculators, though, and people who are buying for their own residences, in markets where there are a lot of speculators bidding prices up. That's where the real danger is right now. And you'll find that in a lot of resort areas, a lot of high-priced condominiums, places where people are paying thousands of dollars for options to buy unbuilt condominiums and then flipping those to other investors and turning a profit of tens of thousands of dollars before the thing is even built.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anything to do with that.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Charolette. Do I have that right in Martha's Vineyard?
Charlotte.
Charlotte. Okay, somebody added an extra vowel to your name. Well, we'll take it away.
Frequently.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we live on Martha's Vineyard. We bought our home 7 years ago, and we're now moving to Maine. And we're wondering, our house has gone up in value tremendously, and it's very tempting to sell, but our friends who live here say, no, don't sell. You know, it could still go up in value. This could potentially be our nest egg. It could be something to leave for the kids. But so my question does it seem like we've reached a ceiling? I guess some of that question has already been answered by other callers, but how far can it go? And we live in Martha's Vineyard is an island, so there is definitely
limited land, yeah.
Yes, limited land. So maybe it's a little bit different than the mainland because of that. And
any advice?
Well, all of us, if only any of us knew how far it could go, that would be the real money maker. But prices in Maine, where you're thinking of moving to, have also been jacked up quite a bit by the same demand. Now, what you should do when you're looking at your decision is maybe you could sell and get top dollar today, maybe top dollar is 2 or 3 years down the road.
Yes.
Your question should be, can you hold it for this period? What will it do to your overall financial picture? Will you have too much money invested in real estate?
Yeah.
This is a perennially popular area, so there's value just in that location.
Yep.
10 years from now, would you still want to have that house? That's the bottom line.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Charlotte, enjoy Maine.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the phone call.
Yep. Bye-bye.
We'll have more with Elizabeth Razzi as we discuss today's housing market and take more of your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about today's housing market, buy, rent, or sell. Our guest is Elizabeth Razzi, author of The Fearless Home Buyer, Razzi's Rules for Staying in Control of the Deal. Of course, you're invited to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And here's an email we got from Summer. In Baltimore City, we've seen the house that we want to buy and live in for many years, but when we looked up the tax records, we saw that the current owner purchased it about 20 months ago for only 40% of the price he's asking for it now. In other words, the owner wants a 150% profit for holding the deed for less than 2 years. Regardless of whether the price is fair, I'm bitter to imagine handing a profiteer, a flipper, such a windfall. What do your guests have to say about that?
Oh, well, isn't that terrible? It just grates at you that somebody would make that kind of profit and that you haven't. That's the real kicker. But the most important thing is, do you want this property? Is it the right price now? Is it a fair price? And that's the only thing you can go by. There are speculators out there, and some of them are just cleaning up. They're doing very, very well. You know, that's the way it is. It's a free market. Your decision is today's price and today's property.
Maybe, as in many things involving money, you should try to get emotion out of it.
Yeah, you know, just go and stomp on a picture of the guy's face or something and then go ahead and buy it if you think the price is right.
Maybe why they invented dartboards.
Exactly.
Let's talk now with Liz. Liz is calling from Philadelphia.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Liz.
Hi, I was calling because I and my partner just bought two houses in Philadelphia, one to live in, my first time I'm owning a house, and another one to rent and help us with the mortgage. And both of them are fixer-uppers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering about how much of a risk it is with the housing market going up so fast here in this city when you're not actually buying with the intent to flip the house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mostly taking advantage of the low interest rates before they go up.
Sure. And first of all, Liz, congratulations on that first house. But
Thank you.
Elizabeth Razzi.
Absolutely. Congratulations and enjoy yourself. The question is, do you have enough cash to carry this investment through some lean months? The housing market has been raging, but is the rental demand good for this property while you fix it up? And so it can still be a good long-term investment for you as long as you have the cash flow to cover the repairs that are necessary and to handle any vacancies when that place is not rented for a while. And if those numbers work out for you, then you're still in good shape.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye, Liz. We were talking earlier with Pam Woodall at The Economist. She said that in the article, in the magazine, they said in a lot of places you can't get enough rent these days to pay the mortgage.
And again, that depends on the market. There have been so many people investing that there's now a lot of supply for rental in some places, like oceanfront communities. That's happening a lot. In other places, rentals have been taken away from the market to go condominium. The owners of rental apartments have turned them into condos, and now there's becoming a shortage of rentals in those markets. So you need, as an investor, you need to find out what the demand is for those rentals.
I'm surprised we've gotten so far into the program without saying location, location, location.
It goes from block to block. It's that important.
Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan, the man who actually did coin the phrase irrational exuberance, he mentioned it about 3 years before the bubble burst, but he's now talking about froth in the U.S. real estate market. Should be concerned about whether the Fed is, you know, their role in this? He plays a role. They could raise interest rates.
Well, if the Fed is concerned, anybody should be concerned, but the Fed has been trying mightily to raise interest rates, and it hasn't been happening in the housing market. Long-term interest rates, 30-year fixed rate mortgages are lower than they were last year before the Fed started increasing rates. Adjustable rate mortgages, lenders are keeping them artificially low. They're pricing them about 2 percentage points lower than the fully indexed rate would be just to keep business going.
Mm-hmm.
And so more important than the fear of rising interest rates is the fear of these kind of risky mortgages that are out there. The interest-only mortgages are very worrisome, and the large number of people who are borrowing with discounted adjustable-rate mortgages. There are a lot of people out there who are already set up to see their interest rates increase significantly in just a year or two.
Don't those mortgages, though, have breaks? They can only rise so much in subsequent years?
Right, but, for example, the way interest rates are on one-year adjustable rates right now, they're being sold at 2 percentage points below the market rate right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cap is 2 percentage points. So if interest rates were to remain the same, those people expect a 2 percentage point increase in their interest rate next year.
Here's an email question, not unrelated, from Warner in Santa Rosa, California. I'd like to know who benefits if the housing bubble, he puts it in quotation mark, pops.
That's a great question because there are a lot of people who are really struggling with this booming market. There are a lot of first-timers who are just priced out. They're, you know, taking up apartments in their parents' basements and staying in apartments when they'd like to be out of them. There are also a lot of move-up buyers who would buy, ordinarily would have bought a larger home, but have been priced out of the market. And so if prices should soften a bit, that would be a great comfort to a lot of people.
This month, Kiplinger's magazine focused on the 13 riskiest housing markets in America. The source of their findings comes from Marco Van Eckeren, an economist and director of mortgage analytics for PMI Group, and he joins us now from Berkeley, California. Good of you to be with us today.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
What factors did you look at to determine the relative security of a one city's housing market over another?
Well, we at PMI publish the Economic and Real Estate Trends Report on a quarterly basis, and as an integral component of that report, we look at the Market Risk Index. The Market Risk Index is a statistical model that looks at the probability of a home price decline as measured over the next 2 years and within a specific geographic market. So a risk index looks at recent home price trends, that is, home price appreciation, but also acceleration, all at a regional level.
Mm-hmm.
But we also look at local labor market statistics, the unemployment rate, employment growth rates, but also home affordability. And this is really an internally defined measure of home affordability that incorporates income growth and mortgage rates as well.
Yeah. It's interesting looking at your report. Those employment figures and numbers of jobs in the market, that played a large role in your calculation of what you decide is the nation's riskiest market, Boston, Massachusetts.
Correct. Boston actually is ranked towards the top of our risk index with about a 53% chance of a price decline over the next 2 years. This is closely followed by Nassau, Suffolk, New York at about a 51% chance.
Long Island in New York, yeah.
Yes, correct. And right behind the Northeast, we've got the California MSAs, Oakland, San Jose, San Diego, all about a 50% chance of experiencing a price decline over the next 2 years. Now, job creation and income growth are very important in the long run, so affordability really at the regional level aims to measure the amount of income growth that has been created as a result of job creation. And we measure this really since 1995, so affordability is more of a temporal measure, but also a regional cross-sectional measure.
And some of the others, another surprise, Detroit, Michigan.
Right. Detroit actually is very interesting because it's really one of the only non-coastal MSA that's in our top 10. The good thing is that Detroit has been experiencing income growth, which is only slightly below the national average, given such high levels of unemployment. However, it has a very big exposure to the automobile manufacturing industry, the Big Three, which is currently struggling and which is projected to struggle in the near future as well. S&P, the credit rating agency, has recently downgraded Ford and GM to junk, which signals really troubling signs ahead for the Big Two automakers.
And as you go through, I mean, I guess some of these are the usual suspects. I mean, we all know that housing is always expensive in New York and San Francisco, Los Angeles, of course. And you mentioned Florida, particularly Fort Lauderdale area.
Yeah, the Florida MSAs are relatively rising fairly rapidly in ranking. Fort Lauderdale is now on the number 16 spot after Minneapolis. You know, if you look at our risk index, seven of the top 10 riskiest regions are really in California. The top two, as I mentioned, are Boston and Nassau-Suffolk. But overall, the riskiest markets are in the Northeast, California, and the New York tri-state area. If you look at California, there the average risk index value has risen from about a 374 or a 37% chance of home price declines to about 426 or a 42% chance of price decline over the past three quarters. So this rising really increase in house price risk in certain regional markets that we're observing right now.
And maybe Detroit and you mentioned Minneapolis aside, that leaves a large area in the middle of the country which is less exposed, you seem to suggest, than the coasts.
That is correct. So if you look at house price conditions and housing markets nationwide, there we find that overall home affordability is still very good, especially by historical standards. It's really the certain select regional markets that have experienced this deterioration where the current home price environment has really moved away or pulled away from long-term economic fundamentals, such as income growth, demographics, but also trends in rent inflation. Now, an interesting question was posed before. Are we currently really experiencing a home price bubble? Well, bubble is a very strong word, and it particularly applies to, I think, equity markets, stock markets, but also commodity markets, where there's a rapid ramp-up in prices followed by a rapid crash. Now, in housing markets, we've never really experienced this rapid crash. In the past, we've always experienced an extended sort of slow price decline, which doesn't really describe the behavior of a bubble very well. Mm-hmm. Moreover, the housing markets, fundamentally, there's large barriers to entry and exit. There's transaction costs that you have to be concerned about. So I don't think the term really is very applicable to the housing market.
Okay, let's get another caller on the line, and this is Jack. Jack's with us from St. Louis.
Yes, I'm calling. I'm a remodeler and builder, but a lot of the things that you see in the cost of a home from the perspective point of building a new house is the cost of land, which has totally increased, hand over fist.
Mm-hmm.
But the materials that go into building a house, I see it the same profit margins as I've seen in the over the past 5 years. It really hasn't changed that much.
So the cost of the materials is this a contributing factor, you're saying, Jack?
Yes, it's a big factor in everything that you do. I mean, I don't see the house of the price of housing coming down without the cost of labor, materials, and most of all, land coming down.
Well, let me ask.
Like we said before, land is something that we are not making any more of.
Well, let me ask Marco Van Akron about the first part of that, and then we'll get back to Elizabeth Razzie about the second part about the land. But what about the construction materials? How much does that contribute to housing costs, Marco?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I don't think I can really answer that question, but in terms of the second component, what I can say about cost of land is a very good point. If you look at, for example, the Bay Area here in California, where I'm currently located, land is scarce. The supply of homes is restricted. So what we're really observing is this inelastic supply of homes on the market. Now, if you look at the market clearing price, that's really the interaction of supply and demand that sets that. What this really means is that if there is a shock in the demand for housing due to a decline in affordability because a local economic conditions deteriorate, then it means that the market clearing price is also very sensitive to this inelastic supply of housing, right? Mm. So it creates really increase in volatility, I would say. So it goes both ways.
Well, let me get Elizabeth Razzie again on this.
Well, as far as the supplies going into a new home, global demand has driven up the prices for things like concrete and a lot of steel and things like that, and that is raising the price. But what we often fail to consider is there's also been a boom in remodeling over recent years. People have low interest rates and a lot of home equity, and a lot of them are frustrated in their desire to move up to a better home, so they're remodeling in place.
We're talking about housing prices. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jack, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. Let's see if we can get another caller in on the line. And this will be Rebecca. Rebecca also calling from Washington, D.C.
Oh, hi. Yeah, actually, I live in Tucson, Arizona. And my question was about land. My husband and I are thinking about buying land in the outskirts of Tucson, which is also going through a housing boom, I guess, and we're thinking maybe holding on to it for maybe 10 years as an investment. What's the thought on that?
That's one of the fastest growing places in the country, Elizabeth.
Right. Tucson has been booming. A couple of things to look at. If it's developed land or undeveloped land, it makes a difference. If it's already has sewer lines in the ground and electric lines in the ground and you're ready to go, that's a much safer investment than buying, say, raw land that nobody has touched a shovel to yet, because things can happen to land. You can find that it doesn't support a septic system, or that it doesn't, the city is never going to bring the sewer out that way, and you can get stuck with undeveloped land. As far as investing in a lot in a development and hoping to keep it for the long term, that's the longer you term, the safer it is.
Here's an email from Brian in Sacramento. My wife and I could not participate when prices were a little lower 2 years ago because we had two car payments. We were told to get the cars paid off and then reapply for our loan. We're near to completing our car loans, but now we see homes in decent areas going for $500,000. This is in the Sacramento area. Apartment life is fine for couples without children, but for a parent of three, I feel my children are being robbed of any kind of outdoor life since we have no backyard or nearby community park where children can gather. Is there any hope for us finding a house in California? Elizabeth, quickly.
Oh, good luck. Sacramento until recently was the affordable alternative to the Bay Area, but now prices are going up there, and some Californians are going to find that the equation in California doesn't work anymore, and they're going to be looking inland into other states for the lifestyle that comes with a more affordable home.
And I should point out that in Marco Van Eckeren's report, as excerpted in Kiplinger's magazine, Sacramento was one of the places they talked to about one of the most risky areas in the country. Marco Van Eckeren, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Marco Van Eckeren is an economist for the PMI Group, and he joined us from the Berkeley School of Journalism in Berkeley, California. And we'd also like to thank Elizabeth Razzi, a real estate journalist and author of The Fearless Home Buyer, Razzi's Rules for Staying in Control of the Deal. She joined us here in Studio 3A in Washington. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
When we come back from a short break, an update on the sentencing of Bernard Ebbers and a look at the career of Karl Rove and how it's intertwined with the Bush family in the White House. I'm Neil Cohn, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.